Welcome, everyone, from around the world. This is your host, Maureen Moss, and this is Thrive. My guest tonight on Thrive is Simran Singh, speaker, author, catalyst, visionary, and rebel with a cause. Simran Singh is a publisher of the Nautilus Award-winning 1111 magazine. She is a host of the syndicated 1111 Talk Radio and author of Conversations with the Universe that recently won the IPPI Award, and her latest compelling book, Your Journey to Enlightenment, 12 Guiding Principles to Connect with Love, Courage, and Commitment in the New Dawn. Heralded by leading change agents, best-selling authors, world-renowned healers, and personal development speakers as a unique source of powerful truth, wisdom, and content-rich dialogue, Simran's creative resources result in immense growth for individuals awakening to their greatness. Simran's presence is a vast expanse of media resources that enlighten, enrich, and empower people from all walks of life to step into a more conscious, loving, joyful way of being while knowing they are not on a journey, they are the journey. Simran's website is Simran-Singh, Singh.com. Welcome, Simran.
Oh, thank you, Maureen. It is always a pleasure. You are an amazing goddess sister and fellow vast creator in this world that we have, and I'm just honored to always be with you in conversation.
And I with you, and thank you so much. I think it was very interesting that we had such an interesting conversation before this interview, this morning, just in our having time to chat for a few minutes, and then we found that we had both just gone through this amazing phase of a shift. And I felt like after our conversation, and you said it seems like there's only one of us here, and you say that often, there really is. And what I have also found in your journey to enlightenment, the 12 guiding principles to connect with love, courage, and commitment in the new dawn, that's what happens in this book. When people read this book, all of a sudden, they really are taken to another level beyond what they thought they'd already reached. There's a lot of energy imprints in here. There's a lot of the way you write is very activating. And the thing that I want to point out about this book as well is that a lot of people write very conceptual books when it comes to enlightenment and awakening. But I know you, and I know this isn't a book of concepts. It's a book of truths based on your living it out and proving it out. So let's start off and just talk about really what makes this message that you deliver so unique, so activating, and so purposeful for this unprecedented time in our human history.
I think what I realized, and I don't know that I realized it while I was writing it, but I definitely have realized it more and more, and especially in the last couple of weeks, is that it really has nothing to do with our old story or where we've been or what we've been through or how to get past it or how to heal it or how to get away from it. That's kind of the approach that we've always had. It's really about taking those threads and saying, now what is the new story? Also knowing that that too is a story and can change. And when we get past that idea that there are any limitations and we step back into the place of actually, wait, I get to create a new story, and I get to create it however I want and in whatever way I want, and I get to not just work at it like I always thought I used to, but I get to actually play at it, that this is actually why I'm here, is to play. That is what came through in the writing. It's what came through as I went along the rebel road, and it is what is so integratively true right now in this moment for me. I thought I was living this book on the rebel road. I have just begun living this book as of the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because there's been, you know, where we're at right now as a humanity, it's kind of like we're in a mix master turned up to its maximum speed, and then at the same time we can sense that we're really being woven tighter and tighter and tighter with the source of our creation, with our souls and our authentic and divine natures. And every day it seems like a new aspect is dawning, and that's what you and I were talking about earlier today. And as you just said, you feel that you're just now beginning to live the book. Tell us what happened to, that had you and I having this conversation this morning about something that just really shifted for you. And I say this only because I would love to express to our audience that every day is a new opportunity for, oh my gosh, this just occurred. So there's never this stopping point, or, oh my God, I'm stuck, or I can't get over this, or, oh, now what's going to happen now?
Well, the book itself talks a lot about how to reclaim the divine child, how to really live life instead of from a childish perspective, which a lot of us don't realize we do live from that reactionary place, to a childlike perspective, which means really living in this wide open wonder. And what has happened for me in the last few weeks is I have gotten a greater clarity as to what that really feels like and looks like. And I'm seeing things from that real childlike innocence place of what love looks like, what self-love looks like, what play looks like, what work as play looks like. It's really the approach to our lives and removing the shades, the blinders, the veils, whatever you want to call them, that we've carried that let us believe all these other things, and finally saying, I'm going to look again now at life, but from fresh eyes. And that's the difference for me in this very, very great time of change, is it's given me an opportunity to say, I'm refreshing my eyes, kind of like we refresh a computer. I'm mm-hmm. refreshing my consciousness. And we all have the chance to do that. It really is an opportunity to say, I don't have to live by my old story anymore. I don't have to be bound. I don't have to be in servitude. I don't have to be locked down or in these places of victimhood that I thought I had to be in, or go through all of the therapy that I thought I had to go through. I really can look at everything as if it conspired for my greater good, for me to return to innocence and childlike wonder.
I think that's the key right there, what you just said, that this all happened for my own good. I was recently listening to an interview with someone who was talking about the pain body. And as I was listening to it, and I was listening with very deep ears and a consciousness as to where do we go with that label? Because I think a lot of people, with what you just said, don't have the guiding principle, if you will, to move into this new and fresh perspective, because their mind and ego has them locked down into, as you know this, many former beliefs about their lives, their stories, and it's created a pain body. It's created an ego identity or attachment. So when we talk about, Simran, when we talk about self-love, when we talk about coming to be as children again, when we talk about fresh perspectives, let's do something really unique here and get through the intellectual pursuit that someone may take about this. How do we get into their hearts that this can really, really be left behind? How would you express that this life that seems for many right now to be really imposed, impressed upon, and a lot of people are feeling stuck? How do we help them by a guiding exercise, by guiding keys to move them past the pain body, the identification with what was, etc.
Well, you know, I talk about 12 guiding essences or principles that are of the child. And so if we even just took one, which is wonder, which is sometimes easier to begin with than even innocence, because so many people don't know how to identify with innocence anymore.
Right.
So if we took wonder, I can just take you back to a scenario that I had just 3 days ago. I'm feeling this intensity of things in my own life with this book, with the coming book that I'm writing, of things really, really moving fast, so fast that I won't even know how to keep up with them. And so many of us have lived in this frenzied pace of life where we're trying to keep up with ourselves, trying to keep up with the world, trying to keep up with the things that we think we have to do to get to the place that we so desire that we want. And so I'm sitting here thinking about all of this, feeling with every cell in my body that something big is coming, and it's coming fast. As I know how I feel when it gets in my body, that way I know it's the truth. And I'm starting to think, I need to do this, and I need to do that, and I need to prepare this, and I need to prepare that. And I can feel the constriction in my body. I can feel the stress and the heaviness, and I can feel the tightness of what life feels like, and I'm getting busy living, which is what we all do. We get busy living rather than being in our aliveness. And I started surfing on the internet and looking at different things, and there's some people that are in our realm of work, and I'm watching how fast their lives just all of a sudden have gotten, and how they're thrust into the spotlight, and how they look busy, and how their faces have changed, how the face that they had 2 years ago looked fuller and healthier and happier, and how now the faces look a little more drawn. There's a little more gray around the eyes. There's a tiredness that you can see that's inside of them that wasn't there a couple of years ago when life wasn't quite so fast, or they weren't being asked of so much. And I stopped and I thought, that's not what I want. If I truly can have what I want, but I also can live in the place of wonder, of the child, of having it how I want it, then it doesn't have to be that way. That means it doesn't have to be the stress. Maybe that's what I impose on myself. And as I started looking around my life, I thought, oh my goodness, I don't need to do a thing. I don't need to get anywhere. I don't need to attain anything. I don't need to work for anything, because honestly, I have everything I want right now. I have my happiness right now. I have my little home. I have my 2 children. I have friends that I adore. I have people that I resonate, sister goddesses like you that I completely resonate in heart and soul with when I connect. So what is it that I really, really need? And I realized any stress that's created, it's all self-imposed. I created it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't need anything else, because that's not the life that I want. I don't want to be in that frenzy. I don't want to be tired looking. I don't want to have the sunken eyes. So what if it's all okay right now and I stopped clamoring, stopped pushing to think there's something that I had to have, and just really lived in the wonder of what I have in this moment, fully engaging in it and fully paying attention to myself, because my presence is enough. Not just my presence in the world, but my presence to myself is enough. And in that place, live in wonder and curiosity like the child, because the child on the playground, or the child in my own living room, my Krish, he lives in full wonder all the time. He's in wonder at our new puppy, or at the new game he gets, or at the next book he wants to read. And there's no agenda, there's no outcome, there's no need to achieve or attain anything. And he's alive. He's fully alive. That's what we've lost. That's what I believe this book brings back to people, is a remembrance of that aliveness, of that innocence, that purity, that place of not having to prove ourselves in the way that we bought into.
You know, Simran, when, as you were saying that, and I always, whenever I'm speaking with someone, and I can hear the audience at the same time and the questions, as if I could go into their minds. And what I heard is, And with Krish, it's such a good example, and my grandson, Atea, same, it's just a great example. And And yet, and I thought about this my own self the other day, when you have, and what we say to people now, when people haven't had the experience, Simran, of growing up with loving parents, with the ability to be fascinated and one and have that wonderment without it being taken away. So as a child, you find little spots where you can have your own personal little fascination and wonder, but it's not allowed to really run as a child would through its childhood because the parents have suppressed it in many ways. Not that they meant to, they didn't know any better. But a lot of people have said this to me before, and I've actually felt it my own self before, so I've gone through it. What do you say to people that say, but I don't know how to be like a child? I never really, and this has come up many times, I've never really had a childhood before. I've always been the responsible adult. How do I get there?
You know, it's such an anomaly to me that I've even written this book because I am that person that you speak of, Maureen. Mm-hmm. I have been working from the time I was in the womb. My mother had five jobs when I was in the womb. And then when I came out, I took care of my grandmother at age four while she was in a wheelchair. And from that moment forward, I have done nothing but work. I did not have a childhood. I did not play. I did not have sleepovers. I didn't even have friends. So I didn't even know what play was. And so for me to write this book and have this come through me and discover the wonder and the curiosity and the innocence and all of the guiding essences of the child is an illustrative example that it doesn't matter if you don't know the experience. It is about allowing yourself to shed everything that was binding, and that's what the first half of the book is about, because I had to go through and really get honest with myself of how I had created my own bindings, my own trappings, my own places of servitude, and at one point, even my own magazine, which I had created out of expression and healing and beauty to serve the world, all of a sudden became my own prison. And we do that, you know, we create things, whether it is objects in the world, such as 1111 magazine, or businesses, or even birthing real children. There comes a point where all of a sudden that creation that we are stewarding, we then begin controlling, and then it flips on us and it begins controlling us. Mm-hmm. And we don't see it because it's such a subtle flip. But if we allow ourselves to be so honest, we can see where those trappings are, and then we can step away and say, now the time for that is complete, or now the time for that to go to sleep for a little while is okay, that I can turn back to myself and start to listen again. What's missing? What is taking me from my aliveness? And I know you know this experience too, because we've had this conversation. It is allowing ourselves to let go of being responsible, to let go of being perfect, to let go of being the adult, because we've put being the adult on such a pedestal, but that's not where any of the fun is. The fun is in the whimsy of letting life unfold and be organic and be playful, and it was what we were intended to do because we are the children of the universe. We are not the children of these people we call mom and dad. We're the children of the universe. And so what we're returning to is not the child that didn't get to play because our parents did not know how to let us play. It is returning to the divine mother and the divine father and saying, teach me again how to play because I've forgotten. Show me your wonders. Show me my innocence. Show me how to be alive again. That is the resurrection. It's so symbolic that the grand square and that the Easter weekend and the resurrection and all of these energies are happening at this time because it really is a resurrection for each and every one of us happening in this moment.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you and I spoke about earlier, and of course we talk about, or you talk about well, in your first book, Conversations with the Universe is always talking to us. and I was sharing with you, and I'd like to share this with our audience as well, because as Simran, I had a similar childhood, and I didn't know how to be a child. I had no idea, and I would steal myself away at times and create these little opportunities that I could feel like a little girl, basically. Mm-hmm. And the other day, as I was sharing with Simran earlier, and this is what I'm offering to each one of you, is really paying attention to the littlest things. I was with two girlfriends of mine at the lake, and we're all about the same age. And one of them said, picked up, pulled a blade of grass, and she said, "Remember when we were little kids?" Not that the three of us were together, we weren't, but I think all children have this remembrance. And you'd pick up a blade of grass and you'd put it through between your thumbs and you'd blow on it and you'd make whistling noises. And that just delighted you, you know, and you could just play with a blade of grass and just be delighted by it. And I followed that up with a story about one of my greatest memories and joys and wonders was I would go sit on the grass somewhere outside, and I would be fascinated when ladybugs would come up my arm. And I could sit for 2 hours and watch a ladybug. And in my mind, as I was speaking that, I was thinking, there is a part of me that so missed that fascination and wonder, Simran, as you just put it. And it wasn't within less than 2 minutes that I spotted a ladybug on a blade of grass. And I haven't seen a ladybug in so long. And I put my finger over there and it started to crawl up my arm again. And I reverted back to that moment. Even though I had such little points of being a child, but it was enough. The universe was saying, "I'm reminding you. Now you take it from here."
And that's just it. See, the playfulness is already happening. The universe is always coaxing us into being the child again. And that's what those conversations are about. And I don't know if you know, but the ladybug actually means that your wishes are here to be fulfilled. And it's asking you to not go too fast to fulfill those dreams, to actually let them unfold at their natural pace and allow yourself to play in that beautiful unfoldment of things. And if we would just see that every piece and part of the world is that universe having a conversation, but a playful conversation with us, that in itself is the illustration of what we're here to do. Simply play. Simply walk in the world wide-eyed with wonder, in our curiosity, in our full senses, ready to breathe in, to taste, to hear and smell every single thing that we come across. Even the things that don't feel as good, they are also part of the play. I was thinking about something this morning as I was getting dressed, and it was about the stories that we make up, the stories of our lives that we make up, but more so the stories that we make up as children. And I was listening to my little one outside playing with his toys, and he had his little men, and he was talking with them, and one of them was saying, "I'm going to go off into the mountains, and I'm going to be the one that falls off the mountain and gets hurt, and you have to come and save me." Even as children, we've created the stories where there is some tragedy that takes place and someone comes to save them. We innately play that way, so why wouldn't we make up the stories that we live out to be that way? Why wouldn't we make something where we have to have a hero and a villain and all of the imagination that a child would have? That's what we've done here on planet Earth.
Well, I think it's interesting that in one of the chapters, you talk about an invitation that is being presented to each of us right now, and what that might have to do with what you wrote about, Simran, about not being surprised at this time if there are actually two people inside of us now as this invitation and this transmutation is taking place. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Well, there is an invitation, and I believe enlightenment is something that we do have to invite in, invoke and initiate within ourselves. And that just means that there's a recognition or an awareness and a presence to ourselves to say, "I am now ready for this next step." That's what actually removes the veils. That's what opens the doors. That's what brings the conversations with the universe in to be seen in a deeper and deeper way. And when I say that there are two people inside of you, there's one that you've known, one that has the beliefs and the patterns and the behaviors, the identities that you have built around yourself, that everyone else knows you as and that you have bought into behaving as. And then there's another. There's another that you have no idea of who that is, that is more powerful than you can imagine, that has gifts and talents that you had no concept that even could be within you. And it is the merging and the discovery of the known and the unknown that actually allows you a greater expanse of your full self. And so as you allow yourself to move from being the replica, the Stepford human that is the copycat of your family or your society, into what I call the rebel, the creative rebel that says, I'm going to live my unknown self now, and I'm going to allow that to come forward without any need to control it or suppress it or limit it or even decide that I can judge it. I'm just going to allow it to express. You will discover a voice and an expression and a creation within you that gives you a level of excitement and pleasure and expansiveness that you've never felt before. And you will open up to a fountain of youth that allows you to dissipate illness and get rid of the tiredness and allow the depression or the anxiety to move away, because you're going to be more present to something that is a mystery, and that mystery is you.
And when people are doing this, Simran, I want to talk about their intentions. And when I was reading your book the second time, actually, you point out that our intentions may be causing us problems. And I'm wondering if what you just said now ought to perhaps be clarified even more by setting new intentions, because certainly we've been told how to set intentions through many a book or inspired passage written here and there, how to have ceremony around our intentions and how to hold on to our intentions. Though you write something very important about how our intentions can become a form of servitude. And I think as we're traversing between who we were and who we are and making these new choices and decisions about ourselves, our intentions have to be very, very conscious. So can you explain a little bit more about that?
There's two sides to intention, actually, and one has to do with the intentions that we always hold, because whatever showing up in our life is part of an intention, and if we've got things showing up that don't feel good or are uncomfortable, those are unconscious intentions that are being played out from the beliefs that we've held. And if we have intentions that we're setting to create something in the world, then all of a sudden we're putting a framework, we're putting a box around what it is that we would have, and we're asking that then to unfold. And when we do something like that, there's such a level of control with the intention that instead of being in service, we are creating something that we eventually will become in servitude to, rather than being in service, because we're trying to point at something in the future rather than being in the present with where we are. I talk about the law of attraction in the book and how we even have that kind of wrong, because children don't set intentions. They don't say affirmations. They don't build vision boards. They don't do any of those things. But if I watch my own children and many others, they naturally manifest what they're looking for. They get the bikes and they get the toys and they get the candy and they get the TV shows and they get the love and they get the experiences. They get everything that they want and desire, but it has to do with the level of energy and more so, I believe, attention to where they are. And from that place, they're stating what would be the proper, and I don't even know that proper is the right word in this moment, but the way of intention as it was intended to be. We are placing intention into the future. We are wrapping a control around mm-hmm. everything we want to create, and that control is wrapping itself back around us, and that's how we're becoming bound.
And isn't it simply just knowing something to be so, I feel like when passion meets the heart and we take an action, we don't need any kind of intention. Just that alone is going to burst into motion something that our hearts were holding, that we were choosing for ourselves or desiring for ourselves, that when we don't believe we can't, then we can't. It's like your children, that they don't believe for a moment that they can't have the love and the bikes and the doggy and the just all of the things that you said and then some. And even coming up as an adult, I know that in spite of my abusive background, I manifested like crazy because I never believed that there was anything that I had a passion about that wouldn't happen. There was never a thought that that would not occur. And people used to say to me, you ought to write a book about the law of attraction. And I said, there would be nothing in it because I don't have anything to say. It's just, I have this passion and I don't believe it can't happen. And I was very good at taking action. So it happened. It's really simple.
And I don't know how your experience was, but I can speak for my own. I've been very much a person that has taken action. And I've been very much a person in the past that has always decided to do something and moved forward. I've had a very, very strong will. And what that resulted in was a lot of exhaustion. It really resulted in me becoming very tired at many times in my life because I didn't realize how much I was pushing and willing because I was so in the mode of building or creating something that I didn't stop to see if I was actually doing it from a place of love, courage, and commitment. And that's the byline of your journey to enlightenment is 12 guiding principles to connect with love, courage, and commitment in the new dawn. And I realized this is so integral because that actually meant that a lot of what I created in most of my life had actually been founded on fear. Because I was creating it not with love, courage, and commitment. It was actually the opposite. And so what had to switch was to really start creating with love, which meant really being present to what I was doing, why I was doing it, and how I was going to do it differently than before. To really understand that to create and connect with love meant I had to think of myself first and then allow that to go out into the world. Mm-hmm. To connect with courage meant to step out of the conformity. Mm-hmm. And to allow myself to step into courage, to be different, to be unique, to know that it was okay to not be like everyone else. Because a lot of what had me pushing and striving and trying to attain and trying to achieve was part of conforming. I come from a culture where it's about high achievement, it's about good grades, it's about being a certain class. There's so many things there that come from that society, and then growing up in the American society where we're showing a certain way of living and material lifestyle, and you're based on how many rings you wear on your hand and what kind of car you drive and all of the clothes that you wear. So that's all conformity, and could I step away from that and just be myself? And then commitment was such an integral piece because what is the commitment we have? And as I looked back on my life, I could see lots of places, including my marriage, my 18-year arranged marriage that I left, including that, where I had been half-hearted. I had never been in full commitment to it myself. And so how could it be a success? Because when we are in whole and holy commitment to something, Maureen, it has the success that it needs already mm-hmm. instilled within it, and it has the spark of luck that is required too. So, you know, I would ask everyone to say, when you look at your life, where am I really in full commitment, or am I half-hearted in this relationship, in this job, in this endeavor, in this new experience that I'm stepping into? Because if you are half-hearted, it will not result in success.
No, and I agree with you, it absolutely won't, which brings up that phrase that I've been using a lot as I was writing in my journal, as I've been making, like as you, as all of us, many, many, many shifts. And really, we'll talk about this in a moment, really coming into a much deeper sense of, not sense of, really being loving toward myself. And where I noticed my hookup was when my passion did not meet my heart, or my heart did not meet my passion. That would be half-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, my passion and heart were meeting. And then I went through a stretch of time where my passion and my heart were not meeting. And when they weren't, that would result in what some may call a failure. It became a learning experience for me to come back to that passion, heart, and action, which to me feels like courage and commitment and love, just called something different. Because I think it takes a lot of courage to have a passion that is born within you and have no model for it, no go-by for it, maybe not the resources for it or the things that people think they ought to have in order for it to become real in their world. And when you have that passion, that courage, that commitment, that love, and it connects with the moment and you take an action, and you don't allow the mind to get in there and use its logic to be your life coach and tell you why it won't work, which is what I believe has happened so often. And I actually fell into that myself for a while. And then I got out of it. But it's something to really, really take into consideration, and it's an easy way to take it into consideration when you connect with, I think, the buzzwords, Simran, of love and courage and commitment and heart and passion and action. So you don't, when you're in that space, don't you believe you can't burn yourself out? When you're really in that place and not, and you recognize and you're holding yourself accountable and responsible, that you're not doing it for the reasons of pleasing your parents or society or anybody else or your ego that thinks this is the way to be somebody or valid or worthwhile in this world.
Most definitely, Maureen. You know, I think that so many of us can fall into that place where we are afraid of what the outside world is going to think or feel. And, you know, I was watching an interview last night that Oprah had with Elizabeth Lesser, and Oprah mm-hmm. kind of started tearing up and crying, and she spoke about how her one wish was to be free. And then another place she started talking about how when she began the OWN Network, how it was so hard because people were judging it, and she received one email that helped her feel at least a little bit supported because she had been buying into what everyone was expecting, everyone was wanting. And it's so easy to go into that place because that's how we're reared. We come in wanting everyone's love because we are taught that the love we are is not worthy. And my past year on the Rebel Road has been a pure example of that commitment that you speak of, because I fully dove into that experience for no one else but me. I broadcasted it. I allowed it to be an example. I shared it in many ways with everyone. But being a hermit my whole life, hiding myself my whole life, suppressing my voice, being the perfect daughter, being the perfect wife, and following all the rules had gotten me to a place that I had to see me. My nickname is Simi, and I had to see me, and I had to do it whether it made no sense or whether it attained nothing. I had mm-hmm. to do it whether not one soul showed up in an audience or whether I was good at singing or humor or any of what I was about to do. I just had to do this so that I knew I was worthy of my own time and my own presence. And in doing that and in going around the country and putting on all these shows, I can tell you I had audiences of 500 people and I had audiences of one person, two people, five people. There were situations where hardly anyone showed up, and those ended up being the richest of the experiences. Mm. The reason being because I was really cognizant in those moments that I'm doing this for me. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get lost in the crowds or get lost in the success or get lost in the awards and think that you're doing it for someone else. But there really is no one else here. There really is no one else here. There's only you. And if you can't live this life completely for yourself, in the full timelessness, boundlessness, and expression that you are, in the full devotion to your soul journey, then you are doing nothing else for anyone else anyway.
And that again, is such a great point, and I think a perfect time to also, and I was thinking about asking you what your feeling was about this as well, is that I know that doing sessions with people or doing classes, whatever that is, people are still hooked up, Simran, in believing that there is something they are, quote unquote, supposed to do, as if there is some kind of mandate being sent from somewhere outside of themselves that must come before they take an action. And for as long as I've done sessions and classes with people, it has been the number one asked question, and I still find a vast majority asking the same question and waiting from guidance from some other source, which you and I talked about today, to tell them what they are supposed to do next. And when one is waiting for someone, we are the someone. We are the God, the universe, the beings. We are that. No one outside of us is going to tell us what we're supposed to do. And if we're waiting for that, we will be waiting for another transformation in consciousness to come, because it won't happen, and you'll cut off your own joy and pleasure and your own width and breadth of who you are and what you're capable of. What do you have to say about that?
You know, we do that to be a distraction from our power. I can give you an example.
Yes.
I had a woman, I do these seeing sign sessions where people can write in or book a session for me to help them understand how the conversations with the universe are occurring, so that they can then follow their own conversations. And I had a woman from Portugal that emailed in to have a session, and we were talking, and I helped her understand exactly what was going on. And the irony was, I had had a session with this woman in other ways a couple of times before, and the same messages were coming through. And we finished the hour session, and her final question was, well, can you do a process or something, or send me some energy and just fix it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, first of all, there's nothing to fix. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, you can run around looking for all these people to do all these processes. You can take all these workshops and read all these books. None of them are going to do anything for you until you realize it is for you to do. I tell in the book, Your Journey to Enlightenment, I express that I'm not telling people not to read books, not to take courses, not to go to workshops, not to listen to radio podcasts. What I'm telling them to do is not think that that's what's going to heal you. The reason you do those things is so that you experience yourself, so that you experience a greater aspect of yourself in that, not because you're putting someone on a pedestal, not because you think they have the healing effect that's going to work on you, but because you're going into an energy to experience more of you, and you're seeing the mirror of who you are. Because when we think that that healing or that power is going to come from somewhere outside of us, then we have decided that this figment of our imagination that is the world around us that is not actually there is the thing that is going to change everything. And when it doesn't even exist, how's it supposed to change anything?
Exactly.
When we go inside and decide that the universe really exists inside of us, that the healing, the wholeness, the growth, the God really is inside of us, then everything we have is there. And the only reason that we create or go to a workshop or read or write a book is because we are experience experiencing itself, and we are in creative capacity, and we're wanting to know a greater unknown of ourselves than what we know now.
And I really appreciate the way that you shared that. And I really hope that our audience, everything that is being shared here, that is listened to time and again, only so that you can take in the richness, you can take in the meaning for you, because my truth or my story or Simran's truth or Simran's story is not yours. It's not yours. There's guidelines. There's actually, as Simran always says, there's only one of us, but there is still that beautiful, as our mutual friend Panache Desai would say, you know, your soul signature, your soul song that is uniquely yours. And that's the loving of yourself, is knowing your song, really getting clear on what it is that is so uniquely and divinely yours, and having the courage to sing out loud, to not hum the song anymore, but to sing it out loud so you can finally come to know who you really are. What would you say to that, Simran?
You know, Maureen, I did a video today on my daily YouTube diary, and I talk about how there really is only 1% difference for all of us. I am only 1% different than Maureen Moss. You are only 1% different than Maureen Moss or me. You are only 1% different than Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Jesus, Buddha. That is the only difference. The rest of us is all the same. In that 1% that makes us different is all of our shadows, mm-hmm. all of the side of us that would make us different in that way, and all of our complete light, the parts of us that would make us different that way. And I call that the unique genius. That's what the creative rebel is here to bring forward, is that 1% of genius that we bring that is the gift to the planet. And it doesn't have to be, our ego wants to say, oh, that must be something big, or it must be something different, powerful, that changes the entire world. Yes, it is. It changes your world. And in changing your world, you are the ripple effect that changes the world. And I think if we can just get that we are all together a lotus flower, each a petal of one flower, but it's all one flower. And you wouldn't want any petal missing.
And that's a beautiful and elegant way to, of course, to put that. And I remember when I was reading, I think it was the introduction by Richard Rudd, who wrote The Gene Keys, and he talked about your book, that there's an elegant, in your journey to enlightenment, there's an elegant and creative structure about this book that actually gives the reader a strong sense of purpose and form. And that's really what my whole desire in putting forth Thrive is about, is it has been to give the listeners, a stronger sense of themselves and collaboration. And in this book of yours, it really elicits through its wisdom, its stories, its sentence structures, as you've even written, and activations, this strong sense of purpose and form. Will you give us a couple of examples of that?
Most definitely. I didn't want to do anything, and I never want to do anything unless it is a full experience for myself, and it gives an experience to another. And I think that you do the same when you create Thrive or any of your books or any of your writings. And that is the way any one of us should live out our lives, is we should do everything so that it is first an experience for ourselves and then an experience for the other. And so as I wrote Your Journey to Enlightenment, the first part is very serious, and it's radically honest, and it pulls away all of the bandages that have been layered on piece by piece to wrap us up in the mummified manner that we are. And then as it's unwrapped, what we discover is this tiny, tiny precious being that is the child of the universe, a child that says, I am the one who sees, I am the eye of the universe, a divine one. My vision shines upon the world. I am the divine imagination who paints a world that isn't. I am a divine illustration who draws out magnificent works of art. I am the divine sculptor producing great symmetry, forming masterpieces into masterpiece. I am the divine canvas upon which to begin. I cast the line that initiates a grand design. I am the clay. I am the water. I am the potter. I am the fire. I am the clay pot. I am the liquid within it. I am the beautiful gift. I am that which has yet to fill the container. I am the space of the unknown, waiting to become known. The truth is out. And what I want people to know as they go through many of the poetic places of playfulness that are here, or any of the exercises such as blowing bubbles or being on a seesaw and really letting yourself be whisked back or for the first time into childlike wonder, that you understand that when you embrace all that exists outside of you as the rest of you, that when you love what is outside of you as if it exists inside of you, and when you allow the ugliness and the pain outside of you to fully express inside of you, when you bear witness to the beauty surrounding you and truly know that it is you, you'll be able to fully engage and integrate wholeness. The moment is really present now to be wed, the allness and the truth of you, to immerse yourself as divinity expressing in, as, and through, and around you. So it's time to forget even about mind, body, and spirit, because that too is separation. Your life is to be your union and your communion, the marriage of reality and illusion, of dark and light, of shadows, and of all the brilliance of the old story threading its way into the new story. We are here as creative capacity to constantly create, as children at play, just leaping from one sandbox to another, from one piece of playground equipment to another, to be here to laugh, to cry, to be in the ecstasy of every emotion that we would have, so that we totally understand that we are these beautiful, amazing children of the universe. We are here to be the ones that really, really play in the light of this transparency. And a child says, I want to play with you. Ups and downs, where they go, nobody knows. I am tall, I am small, I am narrow, I am wide. Who am I? You birthed as a divine aha moment, a sacred giggle had you be. In the lightness of love, all of creation had a moment where love fell in love with the thought of you. A stroke of insight and a splash of color, the casting of flesh created one like no other, divinely designed spiritual technology, engaging in sacred entertainment, a divine comedy, a divine tragedy, stories layered upon one another, this great novel of the universe, spanning all space and time, epic, uber, legendary, written in the stars eons ago. We've forgotten how to play. We have forgotten how to play. It is time to remember. Will you play with me? The universe asks, will you play with me?
It's a perfect place to complete this conversation. That was absolutely beautiful, as is every page written in this book, Your Journey to Enlightenment. This is not your typical garden variety, Your Journey to Enlightenment. This is beauty, magnificence, wisdom, prose. It's a feast. It's a feast. It's available everywhere. I'm so honored, Simran. You know, we've had many conversations on air, on your show, on my show, on Vopuja. It's just such a joy to collaborate with you, to interact with you, to share with you, to encourage and uplift and motivate and inspire with you. I am so honored, so happy to have you in my life as a sister, as a friend, as a collaborator in this entire human experience. Thank you for sharing so beautifully your words and your wisdom, your heart and your love and your light with us all tonight. Thank you.
Oh, I'm the one who's honored, and to be on the playground of life and to meet you on the playground in the way that we've gotten to meet and connect and get to know each other and giggle and laugh and commune and cry and mm-hmm. every emotion that there is has been the gift to me, and it is the gift that I wish for each person to really play with people, to play with this life in aliveness, because that, I think, is the place that we have gotten to, Maureen, that is just so juicy, so, mm-hmm. so juicy.
Indeed. And your journey to enlightenment, the 12 guiding principles to connect with love and courage and commitment in the new dawn is available on Amazon. It's available everywhere. You can go to Simran's site, SimranSingh.com, for other goodies. And I honor and bless you all. I say amen and thank you to everything that you just said, Simran. Until next time, this is your host, Maureen Moss on Thrive. Know you are loved. Namaste.
In love, of love, with love, and as love. Namaste.